This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human animal connection.
Hi, welcome back to the Human Animal Connection Show. I'm your host, Michael Overly, and I'm with Jeannie Joseph, and we've got an awesome show coming up about wisdom.
Yeah, today we're talking about honoring the wisdom of animals. And we really believe in the human animal connection that, first of all, honoring our own animal nature is essential, and then also honoring the wisdom that animals bring to us. And each animal has their own wisdom, and each species as a group has their own kind of things to share, ways that they perceive the world and strengths, you know, in terms of their senses. And so when we honor the animal nature within ourselves, that helps us to become more aware of the wisdom of animals.
What's the impact of that?
So when we recognize that we are animals, first of all, we're more likely to treat them better instead of seeing us as humans on this hierarchy in some superior position to the animals that we can therefore abuse or mistreat or ignore or, you know, disregard their wishes and their. But when we understand how wise they are, it becomes a little harder to just ignore them or mistreat them. You know, when we recognize, well, let me tell you a story about veery birds. Have you ever heard about veery birds? They told you that story. Well, they're a small little bird. They could fit like in the palm of your hand. And they have a schedule for how they do things, you know, like in terms of mating and nesting and raising the young and flying off and migrating. So they have this whole like thing that they, it's always the same. It's always like that, except when it isn't. And when it isn't the same, when they change their schedule, they know, and we're talking months ahead because they have to be ahead by months to do this whole cycle. They'll start the cycle early when it's going to be a severe hurricane season. So they know months ahead, and they will start mating early, nesting early, raising your young early, getting on their migration trip early to avoid a severe hurricane season. And there was this researcher named Chris Hechscher, and he started studying this for 20 years. And what he found was that the birds were more accurate predictors of the depth of hurricane season than the weather systems. So there was one year where the scientists said, oh, it's going to be a mild hurricane season. But he'd been watching the birds and he knew, and the birds were saying, it's going to be a doozy of a hurricane season. And the birds were right. So you know, that's just one example of how paying attention to the wisdom of animals can improve the quality of our lives. And, you know, there's all kinds of anecdotal stories about animals running for higher ground before tsunamis, and tsunamis are hard to predict. And, you know, but watching all of a sudden, you know, in Indonesia, they noticed the birds stopped singing, you know, an animal started moving to higher ground, and it was a perfectly lovely day, and boom, tsunami. So, you know, it isn't every animal every time that gets it right. But in general, there's a lot to be learned by paying attention to the wisdom of animals, like William Long, who lived, I think over 100 years ago, he was like the first person to really talk about animal communication. He would watch the animals to predict earthquakes, and he would see all of a sudden the deer would kneel. They would get low to the ground, and then he would feel like a couple minutes later this little tremor. And they had felt something, you know, who knows exactly which of their senses or all of them or maybe more than just the five senses that we're used to thinking about that allows them to sense subtle shifts in the Earth's magnetic field. And, you know, the more we learn, the more the scientists begin to show us this evidence. And many people, certainly the native people, have known this for a long time. They've understood the wisdom of animals to guide them in how they live their lives. But, you know, nowadays the scientists are beginning to catch up to this old wisdom, and they can see like dung beetles navigate with celestial. They use celestial navigation to know where they're going. I mean, it, you know, these tiny little things, you know.
Wow.
It just goes on and on, you know, to when we think about, when we recognize and respect the wisdom of animals, our lives improve. And not only because of early warning systems, like I mentioned before, but the spiritual connection, when we recognize that animals are wise, we pay more attention to their feelings. And when we pay more attention to their feelings, our relationship improves, just like with humans. When we, if we're, you know, with our, with the people that are important in our lives, if we're paying attention to what they're feeling, the relationship improves because we're just simply paying attention. You know, we don't have to agree. They might have an opinion that's different from ours, but just recognizing, oh, you feel that way about this? Okay. You know, what can we do? How can we adjust our behavior? That changes everything in the relationship, right? That, you know, that eliminates resentment, that builds the bond, that builds trust. So the communication improves. Everything improves when we honor the opinions, the feelings, the thoughts, the needs, the desires of the ones who share our lives. And with the animals who are sharing our lives, it's really important. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, I can't, the tigers in Africa, they're not in my room, but I don't have to be as concerned with their opinions, or at least as concerned, but, you know, but with the dogs that are in the house, I need to really take into account, well, what does it mean when the sun comes up, and what does it mean when the rooster crows, and why is that call of the wild emerging? And it's real, we have a dog visiting with us, we're house sitting a dog, and she was raised on the reservation, she was a feral dog, and so when the rooster crows, she's up. You know, and she wants to bark back. And for us, that was a real adjustment. That wasn't what we wanted. You know, but just recognizing that, okay, she's responding to that wild signal. There's another being out there calling and she's answering, and may not be my preference. And so we're working to communicate with her to ask her to wait a little, you know, wait another hour or two before you get involved in the chorus. We're working on that. But, you know, this is the difference between being mad at the dog for doing something we don't want and honoring that that's a wise thing to answer that call, to call to her pack, you know, that's the wild in her to do that. And just recognizing that takes away the anger and gives me more peace of mind about it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I got to tell you this story about, I used to live in New York City. I was in the movie business. I was a type A person. You know, I had no time for anything. I was, you know, I was one of those, right? So this one night, and I had a ground floor apartment, and like all ground floor apartments, I'd been broken into several times, you know, and one night I hear this thing on my window. I'm sleeping. It's the middle of the night. And so I scream at it, you know, all kinds of explosive words, which I won't say here, just to be tough, right? You know, tough New Yorker, you know, I lived alone. And I do all my tough words, yelling as loud as I can, get the out of here and all this. And I hear, meow. And I go, oh no. Because it was interesting because I had been getting guidance that I was going to get a cat. And I was like, are you kidding? I don't have time to feed myself. How can I have time to, you know, how can I be a good person for a cat? It's not possible. I'm not going to get a cat. But it kept, the dream kept coming. You're going to get a cat. You're going to get a cat. I said, finally, I said, okay, I'll make a deal. I'm not going to do anything to get a cat. This cat's going to come to me. That's what I said, right? So of course, that night, this little meow, and I thought, well, all right, I'm just going to open the door and give it some milk. I'm not going to let it in the apartment. I'm just going to give it a little bit of milk because it was the winter. It was New York. It was 30 degrees. You know, it's freezing. And so I pour a little milk for the saucer for the cat, this little orange thing, you know, this little thing, right? And the cat walks right by the milk, go through my open apartment door, walks into my house, and that's it, right? The cat says, I'm home. And I'm like, this is not possible. I have to go shoot a movie in Montreal. I'm leaving. I can't, you know, all this, right? So this cat decided that this was home and I was the cat's person. I named him Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, or Wolfie for short. And he, you know, became, this is really, Wolfie really was the one who taught me about animals having wisdom. So sometimes I would have like different projects, and what I learned to do is like three scripts. I'd put them on the floor, one, two, three pile, you know, three in three little piles of scripts on the floor. And I would just sit down on the couch and watch and see which one Wolfie would sit on. And Wolfie would invariably sit on the one that was the best. You know, and that makes no sense at all, right? I mean, obviously he's not reading the script, right? But I learned that he could feel the energy of one script, and that one of the scripts had a better energy to him. And he was invariably right. I mean, I'm not saying I would make decisions based upon that, but the one that he thought was the best, I would really take seriously. You know, I was trying to decide which project to focus on. So, you know, and I remember once at a meeting, we had a production meeting at my house in my living room. There were about 12 people sitting in a circle. Wolfie got up, walked around each lap, and settled on one man's lap. Like he tried everyone and sat on this one guy's lap. And this was the person who had just the most supreme, excellent character. I didn't realize at the time, Wolfie recognized it. Like he had better taste in men than I did. I was, you know, single and, you know, clueless. And, you know, I would always date the wrong person. And Wolfie knew instantly who was, you know, really a good character and who really wasn't. So I learned to really pay attention when, you know, first date they'd meet Wolfie, and that was it for me. I would, if Wolfie didn't like him, I was done. So anyway, that's just a little fun story, but you know, that really got me into the habit of paying attention. And that has continued with me. My dog Sophia, same thing. You know, she will find people, will go to Walmart, and she will find, you know, someone that she just absolutely adores and walk by 80 other people, you know, a lot of other people, no interest. And then one, she just has to stop and look at them, and they go, oh, and then they're invariably the person that really just needs a little bit of love. And it's very special to be acknowledged by an animal, especially, you know, Sophia, my dog, is a trained therapy dog. So she will really look at you and just sit and gaze at you until you melt. You know, so she'll do this in Walmart, right, or the grocery store, and people, it just makes their day. People will tell me, you know, you made my day. And of course, with the kids in our high school program, Canines Teach Compassion, we had a girl the other day, she told me, she said, now I'm going to pass my final exam, you know, because Wolfie just gave her that moment to settle down and relax and be here right now and enjoy life.
It's funny. They're all like little Ram Dasses, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah. Masters of presence. And yeah. We've both written about that. When I had Darby before he died, he was so sensitive to the environment. He would let me know, you know, hours before a storm came that a storm was coming. I'd catch him at the back door, and he'd be doing this certain type of, his body be in a certain position, and be moving slow and sniffing here and sniffing there. Yeah. And I got to the point where I'm like, oh, we got a storm coming. And he would just look at me like, duh.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's clear blue skies, right?
Right.
And then within 2 hours, we've got thunder, lightning, rain, hail. And then he would act accordingly, depending on the severity of the storm that was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
It was wild. At first, I had no idea what he was doing. And then I you know, pulled my head, you know what I mean? And it was the energy. And you've touched on that.
Yes.
And just like Wolfie with the script, he was reading the script, just not how we think of it, right? He was reading the energy from it. And I think it's really important for people to understand there's more than we can just see with our eyes.
Right.
There's more going on out there. And I think it's important to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like I was letting Wolfie make the decision for me. I mean, I viewed it as a partnership. If he thought that script was the right one, I really gave it a serious, you know, and I often found that, we agreed. I don't think there was ever a time that we didn't agree on a script. You can't find that in Hollywood, two people agree on a script. But anyway, you know, it was, so I'm not saying that, you know, I would take him to Las Vegas or something like that and try to bet based upon his reactions. But you know, but using this as a partnership really improves the quality of both of our lives. I think he enjoyed it too. You know, he used to like these little sessions where he'd put the scripts on the floor. He's like, oh, this is fun. You know, it's a little game.
Yeah. He peed on that one. I guess we're not going to look at that.
He didn't pee on it. He'd sit on it. But right. I know that book, right? Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. So awesome.
Oh, yeah. What was I going to tell you? I wanted to tell you the story about, like, when I was working with military families and, you know, working for families with people in the special forces. And in the special forces, this was, you know, in the height of the war, they can't give their family or anybody any warning when they're returning. So there's no warning. They've been gone for a week, months, or whatever it is. You know, they're gone for these missions. They come back, no warning. Could come back in the middle of the night. They could come, you know, no warning. And, you know, this can be stressful for family, you know, not knowing when the husband's coming home. Maybe the house is a mess, whatever the issue is, right? So, but what's interesting, the families that had dogs, the dogs would know a couple of hours before their person was coming home, and they would sit on the porch. And this was like an early warning system. Oh, my husband's coming home. I better clean up. I better get rid of the extra lever. No, just kidding. You know, they would know that they had to get the house ready and get, you know, kids ready and get everything ready to receive, you know, get them into that state of mind, because it's really, it's hard to have somebody just show up, you know. You know, it kind of disrupts the whole family system. But because the dog knew, and I just, countless stories of this, you know, several dogs, several houses, different types of dogs, and they all knew. And they just, and you know, there's a story about Queen Elizabeth with her dogs, that sometimes the servants wouldn't always know because of security. When she was coming back to this one, I forget which castle it was, maybe it's Balmoral or one in Scotland, and where her dogs were, the corgis. And the dogs always knew a couple of hours before, or I think it was less than a couple of hours. It was short. It was a shorter duration, but they knew. And then the servants could just make sure everything was all ready and they were prepared. And so, you know, by listening to the animals, lives can get better, you know, like with any partnership, the quality of the partnership improves the quality of our lives. So by honoring the wisdom of animals, we move into partnership instead of, and away from the dominance model, thinking that dogs, that animals are just dumb, instead viewing them as having all kinds of wisdom.
Hey, let's take a quick break, and then I want to ask you about snakes.
Okay.
Hey, friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Human Animal Connection Show. We've talked about some wonderful things, honoring the wisdom of the animals and what they teach us and how they help us be better people.
Yeah.
I had a question for Jeannie about snakes.
Yeah. And
I know that there's a lot, we had touched on Native American beliefs a number of times. You know, sometimes they're known as little brothers or little sisters. So what does that mean? What's the impact of viewing snakes as little brothers?
Yeah. So there are several native cultures, and this is, again, J. Allen Boone tells a story. He's the author of Kinship with All Life. And he had several Native American friends, and this was in the 40s. And he recognized that a lot of white people were getting bit by rattlesnakes. But when he asked the natives if they got bit by rattlesnakes, they said almost never. And he said, well, why is that? Why is it? And the Native Americans said to him, well, the white people have the idea that the snake's going to kill them and they're afraid of him and they have murderous intentions the moment they see a rattlesnake, whereas the natives have the opinion that they're little brothers and that they have messages for them. And so the snake will just simply go on their way, you know, and there'll be a nice moment of recognition and the snake just continues on their way. It's not to say they never get bit, but it's very rare for someone who has the opinion that snakes are brothers to get bit. And we've seen those, like those religion. I'm not a snake fan, by the way. So I used to have total phobia of snakes. I lived in Hawaii where one of the reasons I lived there is they didn't have snakes. So I'm not like a huge snake fan, but I've become much more neutral about it, much more recognizing that the fear doesn't serve me, and to recognize that they may not be my best friends, but just to recognize that they are beings and conscious, you know, rattlesnakes, their gal pals will babysit for them, you know, when the mother needs to go off and find some food or whatever, and they have their ways, you know, they have their wisdom. And so the natives who viewed the snakes as little brothers rarely got bit, whereas the white person who saw them as instant enemies often did. So it's just an interesting story that J. Allen Boone tells in his book, Kinship with All Life.
Yeah. I've read that some time ago. Wonderful book.
Yeah. And that there was a research scientist named Brian Hare, and he talks a lot about dognition, which is basically the wisdom of dogs. And he wrote a book called The Genius of Dogs. And Franz de Waal also wrote a book called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? And the message there is that when we try to impose our own version of what intelligence is, it may look like the animals are dumb, but when we understand that they have their unique wisdom, we might realize how dumb we are. Like, we can smell a cheeseburger. We've got a good nose. We can smell a cheeseburger. But a dog, when the dog smells a cheeseburger, can smell the meat, the cheese, the lettuce, the tomato, the bun as separate scents. Like, they get all of that. Whereas we, you know, we're just probably going to get one scent unless we're, you know, a chef and really trained to distinguish it. And so the moral of the story is that if you looked at, if we were to impose the version of scent as the indicator of intelligence, we humans might be considered dumb compared to dogs who can find a bomb, you know, or find a cell phone in a prison or whatever. You know, their senses of smell are so finely attuned that they make us look dumb. Now, obviously, we're not dumb, but our noses are not as finely tuned as theirs. So the moral of the story is that we have to have different criteria for evaluating intelligence and wisdom. That, you know, one of the things, for example, if you've heard of the story of the mirror test, which is, can an animal recognize themselves in a mirror, which dolphins can do. Like, if you put a little red dot on their forehead of an elephant or a dolphin, they know it's them when they look in the mirror, as opposed to another. Whereas dogs get confused. They're not sure what they're seeing. They might bark at it. You know, they don't understand that it's them. Okay. So they said, okay, well, dogs don't have that self-awareness because they can't pass the mirror test. Well, the reason they don't pass the mirror test is that vision is not their primary lead sense. Their primary lead sense is scent. So they are confused by the mirror test, not because they are not intelligent, but because vision is not their primary sense. But a dog can tell if you put some pee on the ground, the dog knows it's their pee or another dog's pee. You know what I mean? So we couldn't, if you put a couple of pee samples for us, we wouldn't know our own from somebody else's, probably. Probably. I don't know. Yeah. It'd be an interesting experiment. But, yeah. But the point being is that the dogs know not only whose pee it is, but all kinds. That's why we call it sniffing the pee mail when they're going around the neighborhood, right? Because not only are they seeing, oh, that's this dog, that dog, but they have all kinds of information from the pee. Yeah. They know the state of the health of the animal. Like horses, for example, if they're smelling the poop of other horses, they can tell if it's a male or female, if the female's in heat, what the emotion is at the time of dropping. You know, they get all kinds of data. Now, we can't get all that from sniffing stuff like that. You know, it just looks like horse poop to us. It doesn't, you know, maybe if you're trained, you can see some distinctions in health or well-being, but the horses know everything. You know, they know what their status is in the herd from the poop, you know? So it's, if we were to judge human intelligence by our ability to tell poop, we would be stupid, right? Well, we're not going to say we're stupid. We don't have that particular sense. You know, they did a really funny story, a funny experiment with chimpanzees. I think maybe I have this. I'm not sure which kind of, I think it was chimps. Anyway, they took pictures, close-ups of their rear ends. The chimps could recognize each other by seeing a close-up of their rear end. You know, they've done facial recognitions. Can chimp recognizes faces, whatever, you know, the way people do, whatever. We couldn't tell, you know, your mother from your, you know, from the guy at gas station, you know, it's not, sorry to be crude, but you know, the point being is that different species all have different ways that they perceive their world. There's a German word for it. I just forgot what the German word is, but basically it means that your perception shapes your experience of the world. And so different animals, like the way a bird sees the world, like we feed the birds in our backyard. So unfortunately that means we also have visitors. They're hawks, right? So right. These hawks can come from I don't know how far away, and they know that there are birds here, you know? And the same way the birds, when we feed the birds, they come from who knows how far, you know? And they just know the moment that we've put the food out, and they come, and we don't do it at the same time every day. We're not that good at it. But they know the minute it's here because of that eyesight. And interestingly enough, pigeons, I'll just bring up pigeons because pigeons don't get enough respect in this world, and they really do deserve it. But pigeons can be trained to detect metastasized cancer cells on scans. You know, they can see that. You know, they have the ability to detect hairline fractures on an X-ray with the accuracy of trained medical professionals. In fact, even a little better because they can see such fine distinctions. So you know, this is an example of honoring the wisdom of pigeons, is to recognize the next time you see a pigeon, you know, say, wow, hello, beautiful, smart, wise pigeon, you know, instead of hello, dirty bird. You know, it's like recognizing. And the homing pigeons, remember, that was one of the main ways of communicating before we had telephones and telegraphs that would send messages, and pigeons knew how to fly home. You know, they have incredible skills that we don't have for navigating, you know, so just recognizing that every species has its own wisdom, you know, like the giraffe behind me, the reason why there's a giraffe here, giraffes have one of the biggest hearts of any animal, you know, because they have such a long neck, it's got to go, the heart has to pump, so this huge heart, you know, so they're sort of symbolic of loving being with this huge heart, so yeah, and they see the world, the way a giraffe sees the world is different from the way an ant sees the world. And it isn't that what the giraffe sees is right or wrong, or what the ant sees is right or wrong, but their different perspectives change how they experience the world.
Yeah. And a different species actually can see different things in the light spectrum.
Like, right.
They can see colors that we have no idea even exist.
Exactly.
You know, when we use appropriate filters and other lighting methods, then we can see what they naturally see.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. So there's so much we don't pick up on, and we think we're all that in a bag of chips. We can learn so, pick a species, we have something to learn from them.
Exactly right. And, you know, even the snakes, right? So even though they're not my favorite, you know, I recognize that they have wisdom. And one of our board members had a really beautiful experience, and he rescued a snake that was in trouble, that was trapped in a fence or something. And he helped it with a stick, and the snake was freed, and the snake started to slither away and then turned back and looked at him, like almost to say thank you, and then went on its way, you know. And it was a beautiful moment because he was very conscious that the snake had consciousness and chose to intervene. He could have just walked along, you know, could have just continued on his path, but he saw this snake in distress and decided to help it.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah. So that's, you know, what we really want, our kind of our message of this episode is that being connected to your own animal nature helps you connect more to the wisdom of animals. And whether that be the animals that share your life, or animals in the wild, or animals on the planet, whatever it is, wherever your focus is, just recognizing that they have wisdom opens up the potential of communicating with them. Because, like, if I recognize you as a smart and beautiful being, you're going to want to communicate with me. But if I think you're some kind of idiot, you know, maybe I'm not even going to give you the time of day, and you're not going to like it either, right? So, but if I say, oh, wow, Michael's really wise, and he's really smart, and he's really in his heart, and he's a good person to talk to, you know, it's going to improve our connection, right? Versus if I think something different. So it's the same thing with animals. And so when people ask me, how can I learn animal communication? I say, well, step one is to recognize that they have a wisdom and that they do communicate. And that expands. I have, you know, Maureen, who works with us in the Human-Animal Connection, is just starting to learn how to talk to trees, you know. And so, but there was a time in her life that she would have thought that was cuckoo land, you know, to talk to trees. And now the other day she had this experience of feeling the tree breathing. You know, like it, you know, she could feel the breath, the breathing, you know, the subtleness of that. And the other day, I forgot what the tree said to her, but what did the tree say to you? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So she had a tree in her previous where she was living that she had a strong connection with, and she felt sad about having to move and leave that tree. And this new tree was teaching her that she can still be connected, that all the trees are connected, and that she can still feel the presence of the previous tree through the new tree. And that was, you know, revelatory. And that was something that in the past, she would have just thought that was just a cuckoo thought that she had. But now she could see the difference between what her own thoughts feel like, thoughts that we generate, you know, thoughts that, you know, are from our psyche, versus receiving from another being. And that was really life-changing for her, or is life-changing for her. So.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, we are literally all connected.
That's right.
We create the separation with this device up here.
This head thing.
And folks, I'm tapping on my own skull over here. It's true. And, you know, we're raised a certain way by our folks who didn't know better, who were raised by their folks who didn't know better. And
right?
It's not to be critical or judgmental, but just be aware that there is so much more available to us.
Yeah. Well, I think what's really interesting is that there are these cycles of knowingness when you're looking at a history of the humanity. So there are cycles when we knew and cycles when we forgot, which was when we ran off half the species of the planet. And we're in a cycle now of remembering. So we're remembering now that animals have wisdom. And through remembering that animals have wisdom, I'm hopeful, optimistic, that that will result in better treatment of animals. And we see that now with, you know, there's a whole group of people that don't want to see the kind of experiments on laboratory animals that have gone on for many decades, thousands, millions of animals, and to recognize that maybe that, well, first of all, the truth is that experiments on animals are somewhere between 80 and 90% ineffective in proving their results on humans. So it's not good science anyway. But secondly, ethically, you know, to just think of them as like things versus beings is not good for us or for them. So I'm hoping that as people become more curious and more aware of animal wisdom, that as a culture, we humans will learn something and learn to be kinder, more compassionate.
Yeah. Not seeing animals or other people as our possessions.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Huge.
And in our next episode, in our next episode, we're going to actually talk about opening the door to animal communication. And as I said, this is the first step. Recognizing that animals have wisdom. We have wisdom. They have wisdom. Different wisdoms. And that when we come together with our wisdom, each of us becomes greater.
Love it. I am so excited. I can't wait. Jeannie, thank you so much for this. This was fantastic.
Thank you. We'll see you again. Aloha for now.
Aloha.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services. You can reach Michael Overley, author of Let Your Dog Lead, Musings on How to Create an Exceptional Life, on his website at dogsandmen.com or email michael@dogsandmen.com.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.